continue on talking about change a bit. Next week, we're going to center ourselves around our core message as a house. And then starting on the 29th, we'll be in our first emphasis, which will be formation, which we're super excited about. But tonight, I wanted to continue as we did last week, this week, talking about change. As I've told you, just kind of a recent obsession process is just how we change as believers. You know, just as Josh was saying earlier, you can get caught up kind of in the mental space of, have I changed? Do people in the church change? Do we actually become different? Do we actually become holy? And we make these statements like, you're as righteous as God, and you make all these things, and there's a reality of, is that real, or is that some type of figurative speech that we use? And I really think that understanding change correctly will really help us. I think all of us, if we were to do some type of self-examination, would begin to recognize at least a couple places within us that we all want some type of change, hopefully. And sometimes that's spiritual, sometimes it's not. I mean, I have spiritual things I need to change, and I also need to get myself to a caloric deficit also. So that's not really a spiritual change, but it could really help me in my life and being able to get off a couch easier. But hopefully all of us have some things that we recognize that we need change. Change is becoming a very popular topic, or another way of even saying it is habit. All of us have habits and things and desires we wish to change. I was doing some research. Atomic Habits by James Clear. It's a good book. Has sold 20 million copies in the U.S. The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg has sold 5 million copies in the U.S. And in 2020, the self-help genre of literature, it was worth $10.5 billion. Self-help books, change books, habit books, that's all becoming extremely popular because we want to change, right? We want to understand how we change. We want some gratitude when we change. One of the things I love about my wife is she really will get like four or five things like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to change this. And then after a couple of days, if I haven't noticed that she's changed, she'll kind of go, you know, I haven't done that in a week. As if to say, like, I don't know if you noticed or not, but I'm really different now. And I have to go, wow, that's incredible. She's like, I know. I didn't know if you noticed. She wants this, like, hey, do you notice that there's active change happening in me? I think all of us have, you know, different things. The issue most of us are facing, I think, is that most of us, whether spiritual or non-spiritual, are using kind of a law base to change. Most of us have grown up in legalism and religion, and even if you haven't, most of us kind of have used the example of the law on how to change. How does that example look? It's really broken down into three things. Most of the time, especially for Christians, the way we believe we change is that we have an awareness of what's good and what's bad. We become aware of the godly things and the bad things. Second, we acknowledge out of those things what truly is evil. And then third, we shame ourselves for what is bad, and we hope that that somehow turns into bodily change. So I examine myself. I examine the things that are wrong with me, whether they're physical or mental. I think about all the things that, you know, and everyone probably has this moment of if you know, you're at dinner or lunch with someone and you're thinking, if they knew what I was thinking in my head, they would never talk to me again. You know what I mean? We all have those things. And so we examine those things. We get in our kind of time with the Lord, whatever it is. And we first we practice this form of confession where we go, hey, like, I know I'm awful. I know this is awful. Everything about everything is awful. And then we kind of present ourselves to the Lord and we go, and I'm so bad and I'm so awful and I'm so sorry and I'm so this and I'm so that. And I promise you that I'm going to change. And we hope that somehow grants us enough genie dust to maybe wake up the next day and change. We do it outside of the spiritual world. How many people like actually start a diet or something because you woke up and looked at yourself in the mirror naked and thought, I hate everything about this. You ever wake up in the morning, you're looking and you're thinking, what's wrong with you? And you're thinking, today, things are going to change. And then that night you go, Dairy Queen closes at 10, and I could probably make it if I leave right now, right? So we have this idea, we use shame oftentimes as our process because that's what the law taught us. If you're a Christian and you read the Old Testament, you kind of look through the Levitical order, the process is, this is good, this is bad, you're bad, and this is good, and you can't be this. And so we've brought that into every aspect of our own lives, every aspect. And it's funny because a lot of these books, Atomic Habits, The Power of Habit, The Power of Change, these books are built around not examining what you can't do, but realizing what's available to you and working into that. They're using a spiritual model without being spiritual. And this kind of, this thing I think oftentimes has plagued us. And I think like if we were to break down the culprit and really kind of shed back the layers of the onion, I think we would realize that most of us try to change through our bodies first. Most of us do things with our bodies first to change. If you're a young man and you struggle with masturbation, what you do first is you just try not to do it. It's not about what's going on in your head. You're just like, I'm just gonna sleep with my door open and just wear a chastity belt, right? Like, I'm just gonna not do anything. If you have a girlfriend and you're a Christian, like you don't get alone, right? And so you're using kind of all the functions around you. Everything is bodily. But the reality and what the New Testament and the epistles teach us is that change comes from the spirit and the mind affecting the body, not vice versa. Most people will tell you if you want to create a healthy diet, you can't do that by picking something you're going to do for a little bit and then going back. You have to change the way in which you think about food. You have to change the way in how you see what goes into your body. You know, one of the things that a lot of like dietitians will tell you is to listen to your body. If you eat this, how does it make you feel? Because if you get the runs, it's not good for you. You know what I mean? If you eat half a loaf of bread and you're swollen, you've got a gluten allergy. And, you know, there's all these different things that if you listen to your body, you'll discover. But it starts internal. It's an internal thing. And we have to learn how to change the way, and obviously, you know, Paul breaks this down so easily, but we have to learn to change the way we think by connecting again with our spirit to affect our body, which in turn brings change to the entire soul. And that's hard. I can tell by your faces you already don't like where we're headed. And I think in order to understand how we change spirit first, not bodily, we have to become aware, and this is hard for us, is most of us believe that biblical spiritual change, the orientation of our change, is based simply on decision making. If we were to break down what spiritual change is, all we would say is that to become like Jesus means that I simply make better decisions or I have better habits. I think that making better decisions goes along with that, but it's much deeper. It's much deeper than having good habits. It's much deeper than making the right choice versus the wrong choice. It goes more internal into the soul than that. And what happens is, for most of us, we end up in a place where we're trying to change and we use our bodies to try to make better decisions. And when I can't make that better decision from a bodily perspective, I move into discouragement, which moves me back into where I first was. And that's the process most of us live in. It's a cyclical way that most of us kind of process. Most of you, oftentimes we do it seasonally, right? Like, there's so much of my life where, like, in January, that's when you're going to really get close to the Lord. You're going to get through Easter, and then summer comes, and you kind of let it go, and you feel bad. But then your kids go back to school. You're ready to crank it back up again. But then Thanksgiving comes, and who's really going to start getting serious about the Lord around Christmas? That'd be awful, right? So I'll start really reading again in the new year, and we just kind of live in this process constantly, this cyclical cycle of just, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And so I'll do this thing with my body. I'll force myself to wake up an hour earlier. I'll do all these things. And those things aren't bad. Like, I don't think they are. And spiritual disciplines don't necessarily require or need your enjoyment and participation. You should do them anyway. But the process is most of us get to this place of such disillusionment that we end up in a place where I'm like, you're like, just screw this. That's where, honestly, deconstruction's coming from. Screw this. Nothing's different. I'm not changing. I'm not this. I'm not that. And it's not true. The problem is we're looking through the first kind of section of this. We're taking the first half and we're kind of using that as our guide instead of taking the back half of the book and using that as our guide. And there's scriptures that trip us up. Jesus says, you know, if you love me, you'll follow my commandments. Hard part is that's still based out of spirit, not out of body. It's still based out of spirit and out of body. And I want to talk about, hopefully help us understand how we change tonight. How we change. And so I want to pose this question to you, and it's going to sound simple, I know, but like just think about it for a minute before you just answer. Okay, here's the question. Why do you personally spend time with Jesus? Ta-da. Why do you personally spend time with Jesus? Some of you, hopefully, most of you, like get up in the morning early, or you know, maybe you're a night owl and so you do it before bed, but hopefully you have a time in the morning where you get up and you got coffee and you've turned on some kind of soaking music or Stephanie Gretzinger and you're just like in the zone for an hour praising the Lord. And have you ever really like asked yourself, other than everyone else does it, it's spiritual routine and spiritual disciplines, like why do I spend time with Jesus? Like, why do I personally get into that space? And sometimes I don't know if we actively think about stuff like that. You know, when stuff becomes such routine, you just do it. Like, it's just, like, you know what I mean? Like, I've spent enough time with the Lord. Like, it's just what I do. I just get up in the morning, I spend time with the Lord. Like, it's just, I don't know another way to exist at this point. I think if we boiled it down, if we took everyone's kind of their own version of the answer, I think it would come down to two things. First, it would be because I love him. And second would be because I want to be like him. First is because I love him. Second is because I want to be like him. And I think, and I want to say this, and I want you to very clearly understand this, these are correct, great answers. These are great answers. These really should be kind of your two of your main five. If you didn't hit these two, let's have a talk after. You know what I mean? Like this should be somewhat involved in your answering system. And I think the first one is very clear for us. I think we have an understanding that we love them. But second, the second one, because I want to be like him, I want us to focus on tonight. I want us to focus on what it means to become like Jesus. This is obviously very clear, plain language for our family. Very plain language. We use, you know, I mean, literally part of our slogan is become the good news, share the good news, believe the good news. It's basically just becoming like Jesus. That's kind of the whole, I'm going to break the news to you. That's kind of what we're all doing here. But I think the issue becomes, what does that like mean? You know? Like, what does that mean? There's a sports show I watch called Josh Pate's College Football Show, and one of my favorite statements he makes is, every once in a while, someone will say, "Well, this team is overrated," and his response is always, "If you're going to tell me that, you first need to tell me what were they rated," because most of us would say, "This team's overrated." Well, what were they rated? Because you're telling me why they're not good, but you never told me what the expectation was before. So if you're going to say there's something, why? And most of us, like when we make statements like this, like I want to become like Jesus, like I think it's still hard, even for me, like, if you were to watch shows like The Chosen, you know, and you're like watching Jesus and you start thinking like, I'm just gonna move out of the desert, man. I'm just gonna buy some sandals. I'm just gonna wear it out, man. I'm just gonna hang out with buds all the time. We're just gonna heal people, right? Like you're reading like old stuff about like the apostolic fathers and you're like, I'm just gonna start wearing like a robe everywhere and I'm just gonna go for it. I'm not gonna care. Like, and if they don't want me, I'm gonna shake the dust off my shoes and move on to the next town. You know, that's what being like Jesus means. And it's hard because unfortunately, even though we try, it's hard for our brains not to go to like a first century Jewish man when we think about becoming like Jesus. It's hard for us not to think about like, you know, lower possessions, no full roof over our head, like fly as the sparrow does. You know, we think about like the apostles. One of the most challenging things is like, when you start reading about like persecution in the church and then like you realize you're doing that on your back patio with like a fire and a cup of coffee and you're like, I'm awful. You know, Christians are dying everywhere. And you're just like, oh, I hate myself. And so we kind of get caught up in this thing of, and I think we would all have that as one of our answers is I want to become like him. I want to become like him. The issue often remains for us that when we mean we want to become like Jesus, what we're saying is, I want to make the decisions Jesus would make, which isn't bad either. But making the decisions that Jesus would make is a secondary outcome of becoming like Jesus, not the outcome. Not the outcome at all. It is a secondary solution, as you maybe would say it. But it's not the purpose. And it's really in no way at all biblical. And this is kind of what Paul's getting to. We're going to go to 1 Corinthians 2 first. 1 Corinthians 2. We're going to look at verses 14 through 16. Paul makes this incredible statement here. And he says, the natural person does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are folly to him. And he is not able to understand them because they are spiritually discerned. The spiritual person judges all things, but is himself to be judged by no one. For who has understood the mind of the Lord so as to instruct him? And this is what he says. But we have the mind of Christ. Paul's saying, like, if you were to break this down, in English, exegetically, Paul's basically saying, who could honestly be who God's designed us to be? Who could be like that? Who in the world could think like that, be like that? Like when Jesus come on the scene, he was weird enough. How can we expect to be in that same atmosphere? And Paul gives us this question like, who in the world could have the mind of the Creator? Who in the world could think the way God does? And Paul goes, but we have the mind of Christ. But we have the mind of Christ. And this is, I want to tell you, I believe this is one of the most crucial truths to our formation. I really want you to understand this statement. Let it get deep into you, deep into your heart, deep into your mind. Let it make the 12-inch journey. And it's this, that our being transformed into Jesus is about our nature becoming his nature. Transformation into Jesus is about our nature becoming his nature. That includes decision making. That includes habit forming. All those things. But it goes way, 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 way deeper than that. If we were to look at the definition of nature, Webster's would define it like this, is the inherent character or basic constitution of a person or thing. And constitution, if you were to break it down, is structures, thoughts, ways. So the inherent character or basic constitution of a person or thing. And so what's happening is spiritual formation is the journey of me taking on the inherent character of Jesus. There's this weird thing When you have kids, and I just have a baby, but you know, you can see it all the way through, is you could do nothing to make your kids like you, and somehow they're just like you. You know what I mean? You could spend a little bit of time with them, doesn't matter. Every once in a while you have that one that really throws it for a loop. It's normally number three or number four, if you're counting. But there's just this natural thing in them that they're like you. I can already tell. There's this beautiful thing that happens with Benjamin where on Saturdays, I watch college football for around 16 hours. It's beautiful. And when commercials and stuff are on, like, he's like kind of, and there's just, it's, I honestly need to record it. As soon as, like, players are on the green field, Benjamin's like, I just look at him, I'm like, you're my son. Raise a child up in the way they should go and they won't depart from you. You know, and he cries a lot, so he's a lot like his mother. Like, he has things from, no, I'm just kidding. He has things from both of us. but there's this thing where, like, when your kids get older, like, at the end of the day, there's not one Ballesteric kid that you wouldn't know is Chad's, is there? There's not one. All of them will keep you and talk to you for a long time. All of them is trying to maybe sell you something. Like, they're all just like Chad. It's creepy. Boy after boy after boy is just like Chad. And I don't know how this happens, but there's something in our DNA genetically where, and honestly probably spiritually, where we somehow take on the inherent character and nature of our fathers and our mothers. And spiritual formation is not the journey of becoming less crappy by better decision making. Spiritual formation is actually the journey of learning how to change my nature. To change my nature. There's a harsh reality that a lot of the stuff we are dealing with is not about decision making. It's tied up into the kind of the icky mess of our family of origin, how our parents talk to us. How we saw money, sex, power, love, all those things. And so we're trying to use, like, you know, you versions 21-day reading through Philippians to change these, like, deep internal scars. These, like, things in us where my dad made me feel like this, or my mom made me feel like this, or my parents kind of taught me that I was second to this, or I was talked to like this, or this is how I grew up. And some of us, you know, like, if you grow up in the church world, you just kind of suck it up, buttercup. Like, you're not allowed to talk about your parents being bad or your grandparents or whatever. Like, you just have to shut up, and you're redeemed now, so get over it. You know what I mean? Like, you can maybe go to inner healing, but other than that, don't talk about it. And so we end up in this place of, like, you know, like, externally, like, no, I'm good. Everything's good. And, like, behind, like, your face, there's, like, this screaming person, right? And that's the beauty of what Josh said tonight was, like, you know, Josh could have been like, I'm not sharing that. Like, I'm a doctor. Like, I'm not telling people, like, I'm not letting them in my life and my dirt. And there's this thing of, like when you say, hey, like, can you share that? Like, especially when you're a PK, it's like, no, like, we don't say bad things about our lives. We don't do that. Because if you say, like, that your life is bad, you're evil now. And so we don't do that because we're saved. We're saints. Like, we're going for it. Where's righteousness gone around here? Like, we're a big deal. And there's this thing. So then we end up never seeing any actual inherent character change because we're not actually changing our character. We're covering up our scars and we're using, like, daily planners to hopefully make enough good decisions that by supper, maybe you've earned, like, that ice cream and you can go to bed and feel good. And this is what's happening with Christian change, is we're just, like, we're trying to focus so hard on just being different, on just being different, on just being different, instead of maybe the reality that I actually am different. Maybe I have a different mind. Maybe I have a different way of seeing existence. There are two, I was thinking about this when I was back there getting ready tonight. There are two ways in which you can see every situation and circumstance, right? So there's the way of seeing this week and next week as a crazy week for me. I have to get passports ready and birth certificates and marriage certificates. I've got to drive 27 hours across the border, go to a different country with a six-month-old, do all that traveling, come back. I've got to open up a brand new building and preach and all these different things. And that's one reality of existence, and it's true. Then there's another one where I can remember our first service in January of 2021, stepping into that nasty, musky old building. And I remember sitting on the floor near the stage. Me and Brian were sitting on the floor talking after fixing chairs and getting up. And like, there's like a residue on your jeans where it's probably where COVID started. And so you're just like trying to just do whatever you can to like not live in that. And then you have to go to the bathroom where they make, you know, drugs probably or something. I don't know. Some kind of wild animal lives in there maybe. And you can look at this place, this room, this house, this family, and you can go, man, less than 4 years, Lord, look at what you did. Look at who we are. Look at what we're becoming. Look at the reality and nature of this. You know what I mean? And both ways of seeing your existence, they're not wrong. Both things are true. This is stressful. This is hard. This is easier. But both are true. It's how you inherently think about how you're existing. It's how you view the current state of your existence. I told Bailey all the time, and it's easier the next day, but there's been times where Benjamin's like going through a growth spurt, and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I could punt him across the room. I wouldn't say that to Child Protective Services, but internally I'm thinking that. And I'm just like looking at him like, if you'll just go to bed, like I'll give you anything. Anything you want that's in my power, I'll give you. Just stop crying for 2 seconds. And then the next day, like, you're sitting and you're remembering, like, it wasn't that long ago that, like, you and your wife are trying to get pregnant. And every month, you know, when you don't, you're sad and you're crying because there's no baby. And you realize how quickly you can go from, like, you know, like, we're just praying, like, Lord, anything for a baby to, like, Lord, just take this baby to a different place for a couple days, maybe take him up to Zion and bring him back when he's done. And you can quickly get caught up in the reality of how you're viewing your existence. And inherently, oftentimes we get caught up at the bottom of that ladder. And so when we think about decision making, when we think about change, we're trying to start from the body outward and not the spirit inward. And I think the craziest thing about Jesus, if you were to read all four Gospels, is not that he did different things, it's that he thought different. Like, what kind of psychopath, personally, mourns the death of a friend knowing you're going to raise him from the dead? You ever think of that? You ever think of Jesus crying over Lazarus, knowing he's just going to raise him from the dead? Like, who does that? That's weird. That's not normal. You're not the only one thinking that. That's a weird way to process life. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not, it's not how you do things normally. In today's world, if one guy traveled with 12 dudes and they all kind of hung out together, rumors would get started. It wouldn't go well. Like, Jesus lived this kind of odd, nomadic, like, different way. And that's weird, but it's more like how he saw everything. Like, they needed to pay taxes. Jesus says, go fishing. This guy's blind. Spit in his face. Like, there's all these things that's like, dude, you have got to figure it out, man. This is weird. And you want to like look at the bodily, but really it's all like Jesus is all crazy up here. It's all in his mind. You know what I mean? Like he literally tells them, like imagine if I went to the White House tomorrow and said like, I'm going to die and then one day this whole thing's going to come down. There won't be a stone left unturned. Everyone will be like, okay, psycho. Right? And Jesus does this with the temple. This massive construction. Like it's bizarre. And it's not just a bodily thing. There's something about like his brain that just sees things differently. His character is differently. His nature is differently. It's the way he sees the world. And I think that what we have to realize is that we are not simply learning how to make good decisions, rather living from a place where holiness, righteousness, peace, and love are the instinctual nature of our being. I think most of us have a hard time believing that love would be the instinctual nature of our being. I do. When LSU almost lost that game yesterday to South Carolina, love was not the instinctual nature of my being. Anger, pain, frustration. I was about to have the same testimony as Josh was if we'd have lost that game yesterday. I mean, it just would have went bad for me. I was mad. Right? Like, there's these moments where you're like, oh, like I, you know, and like, I'm trying to talk myself through a game like, hey, like, you still love the Lord, you still have a kid, like, just choose peace today. And then we'll turn the ball over, and I'm like, I hate everything. I could burn this whole house down right now. Right? You just like, you're like, okay, just calm it down. And this is just kind of like how you process, like how I'm processing my thoughts. And there's this weird moment where like, can I actually get to a place where the inherent character, my inherent character is love, peace, righteousness, joy? And Paul says it is. C.S. Lewis in his book, Mere Christianity, says this, that putting on Christ is not one among many jobs a Christian has to do. And it is not a sort of special exercise for the top class. It is the whole of Christianity. Christianity offers nothing else at all. Christianity offers us nothing but becoming like the Christ. It's beautiful. A.W. Tozer goes on to say this. He says, when I understand that everything happening to me is to make me more Christ-like, it resolves a great deal of anxiety. When I realize that everything in my life is actually about bringing me into the nature of Jesus, I kind of just lose and fade away from all the stuff, right? In Dallas Willard writes in one of his books, he says that Jesus never expected us simply to turn the other cheek, go the second mile, bless those who persecute us, give unto them that ask, and so forth. These responses, generally and rightly understood to be characteristics of Christlikeness, were put forth by him as illustrative of what might be expected of a new kind of person, one who intelligently and steadfastly seeks above all else to live within the rule of God and be possessed by the kind of righteousness that God himself has. And as portrays, sorry, TM. There's this thing where when we, you know, because he references Dallas Willard, he's talking about the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 6, 7, 8. And there's this thing where, like, you're reading these ideas of, like I remember when I was, like, a 14-year-old boy, and it was like, hey, like, if you even, like, think about a girl with lustful thoughts, you're screwed, man. If you see someone's pretty wife and you think about her, you've basically committed adultery, so you're basically the worst. And Dallas Willard is giving us this beautiful example. It's not this idea of like do's and don'ts. It's this idea of there is actually a nature and a character that can be developed in us in which this becomes the natural response of how I exist. These are not things to look to. These are things to become. But they don't become that way by simply making those decisions, because all of us can make good decisions for a while. All of us can make good decisions. There's a pastor I was listening to, and he was talking about, he heard this Baptist preacher one time. He got up and was kind of talking about, you know, his marriage and how he said, I've never had an affair with my wife. And the guy said, he was about 395 pounds. And the guy in the front row was thinking, I don't think you haven't had an affair on your wife because you love her. I just don't think maybe anybody's asking. You know, like, I don't know if it's really a problem you're running into a lot where girls are just coming up and saying, like, kiss me, please. You know what I mean? You know, I just don't think it's an issue for him. Dallas Willard says it like this all the time. He says, what sin really is something that given the choice to do, you would do. Right? So is the reality that you haven't had an affair on your spouse because you've been given the opportunity and you didn't? Or is it because no one's ever asked? I'm not saying you wouldn't make the right decision, but that's something you have to think about. Is the reality of you haven't done this or that because you simply wouldn't or because maybe you can't? And so sin is often the thing that we would do if given the opportunity. That's what sin really is. Sin lives dormant in us because it's waiting for that moment of decision making. And the only way we make the correct decision in those moments is not by practicing other decisions long enough. It's actually changing our character. It's changing how we think. Let's get into, because Paul's trying to make this so clear. This was the text that Taylor read earlier. This is 2 Corinthians 3. This is 12 through 18. This is what Paul says. He says, since we have such a hope, we are very bold, not like Moses, who would put a veil over his face so that the Israelites might not gaze at the outcome of what was being brought to an end. But their minds were hardened. For to this day, when they read the old covenant, that same veil remains unlifted, because only through Christ is it taken away. Yes, to this day, whenever Moses is read, a veil lies over their hearts. But when one turns to the Lord, the veil is removed. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And here's what I want us to focus on, 18. And we all, with unveiled faces, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. Paul is opening up with this idea that we have given our lives to looking at Moses and how he saw things, the law, his way, the Mosaic way. And the issue with that is the law does not actually connect the void between me and the Father. It actually puts a veil. And every time the law is read without the Christ, it actually makes that veil still in front of me. And the reality of, unfortunately, just understanding what's good and bad isn't going to fix me. And we've talked about the law. What was the purpose of the law? The purpose of the law was to reveal all of what sin was, so that when Jesus came, there was actual guidelines of what is fully holy and what is not, so that when he didn't do any of the things that wasn't holy, he would be blameless. So God gives us the law so that Jesus can fulfill the law by doing all of it perfectly. That's why the law came, right? That's the whole purpose of it, is so that we could see what we could never be. He could become it and say, gotcha, I did it for you. Thank you, son, be quiet. And there's this thing where Paul is trying to get into the brains of the church in Corinth that the idea is that if we just have what's good and bad, if we just have making the right decision or the wrong decision, we're going to be right where the Israelites were. We're going to be right where Israel was, and honestly still is. I think you'd be shocked at how little of the nation of Israel is like Messianic Jews. Almost the whole country still just straight up Jewish, right? And so there's still almost 80% of this nation that sees it through this idea of it's about right and wrong. It's about structure. It's about how you're going to accomplish this, how you're going to accomplish that. They would spend years debating about one law. Does it really mean like pulled pork, or can we have barbecue, or is it, I probably didn't say that, but something along those lines with pigs. And Paul's breaking this down. He's breaking these barriers and saying, if you just know the rights are wrong, it's not going to work. He says, here's the good news. And this is the good news. That the reality is that the veil that Moses had in being unable to be face to face with God has now been lifted. And it is actually through that face to face encounter that we are becoming like the one in which we are looking at. Or as Paul would say, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. This is what Paul's trying to get across to us so harshly in almost every epistle, that it's actually beholding Jesus that doesn't make me a better decision maker. it makes me inherently like him. And when I'm like him, decisions come naturally. Decisions just come naturally. It's just the way that it is. I don't think about it. I don't process. I don't have to go and pray about it. I just do the instinctually right thing. Not as a first or second century Jewish man. Not as one of the apostles, but as Noah. I process my marriage correctly. I make correct decisions with my children, with food, with money, with sex and power, and all the main aspects of life. Paul's telling us that the reason, and this brings us back to our question tonight, the reason you spend time with Jesus is much deeper than kind of the surface statement we would make that I want to become like him. And this is, I know it's going to sound simple, but here it is. It's because when you spend time with Jesus, you become like him. Like you really become like him. In the same way, I can already tell that unfortunately this little boy over here is going to be just like me, as good and as evil as that's going to be for all of us. There's this thing where like I could drop him off at a fire station tonight and I'd find him 20 years later probably with an LSU shirt on. Like it's just, he's going to be like me. It's just how it's going to go for him. And there's this thing that the Lord's trying to get across to us that spending time with me is so much deeper than you think, because it actually means that when you start your day, when you end your day, people actually go, dude, he's just like his dad. He's just like his dad. It's creepy. And that inherent nature, that becoming like Christ to that degree, that is what really sets us, I mean, just gets the ball rolling. And not on just mission. I mean, that's important. It makes people hunger to be like us, but also just in our existence. All the little annoying, antsy things about marriage, all the annoying, antsy things maybe about finances or budgeting or whatever it may be, how small your house is or how big your house is, whatever your issue is. All those nuances of existence begin to flatline in becoming just like the Christ, right? Paul says it so beautifully. Paul says that in lack and in gain, I've learned to be content. Because his existence is just different. The inherent character of his being has changed. And I think when we have an awareness that that's what changes, when we have an awareness that changing into being like Jesus means you're actually like Jesus, hopefully it takes on a whole new perspective, attitude, structure to how we see going into the presence of God. That I'm in the presence of God not to prove something. I'm not in the presence of God to create better habit. I'm not in the presence of God to choose a celery stick over that cigarette. Like I'm in the presence of God because the inherent way in which I view everything is actually like him. My DNA becomes his DNA. It's deep. It's enriched. It's the earliest way we understand how people saw transformation into the Christ. Let's stand up. I'm going to call our ministry team up tonight. And I want to say that if there's something going on, if you need prayer, maybe Josh's testimony tonight just pierced you right in the heart. Maybe there's things you've got kind of underneath that you're just not really wanting to deal with, or you just don't care, or maybe what you're dealing with is the only thing that can bring you any kind of peace. That's why they're here. And I've said this before, but the lie oftentimes of altar call moments or moments to come get in the presence is we believe it's attached to the message we just heard. And sometimes, hopefully that's true, sometimes you just need to be prayed over. I mean, if Paul needed laying on of hands to be sent out on his missionary journey, you could probably use some. We all could. But I will say this, that tonight, I think there is a moment, and it's so funny because Bailey talked about it, and Stephen. Neither of them knew what I was talking about. None of us have really kind of circled back around to each other. But Stephen talked about being able to recite your history with the Lord. And Bailey talked about the idea of your head being low and being lifted. And I think we need to get back to the place of where being in the presence of God is not daunting. And that's true for me sometimes. There's mornings where I wake up and I got this going on, I got this. And it can feel daunting, I do it, but it's like, I just need to get this done. Right? Or you're on it's a travel day or something's happening and you miss and you're just the whole day you're thinking like, you piece of, can't believe you missed that. And I think what the Father clearly prophetically wants to do is I think he wants to lift your head to the reality of the structure of your DNA. I think he wants to remind you of what's available when the veil is lifted and you're in the presence, in the depth of him, in the width of him. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to close your eyes. And when I get done praying, our ministry team's up here. If you need prayer, great. If the line gets long, we'll have some staff come up, but don't be afraid to come up. But I just want to pray over you. Yeah, I want to pray over you, but first what I want to do is I just want to give it a moment. Before we speedily move on to dinner and everything else, let's just take a moment before I pray, and I just want you to ask yourself and ask the Holy Spirit, do I believe I'm becoming like you? Just take a second. So Father, we just, tonight we ask that as we have come and gathered to minister to your heart, that we be awakened to the manifest presence, that we become aware of you in the room, in our house, in our secret place, in our prayer closet, that we begin not emotionally, but from the depth of our spirit to recognize that my character, my nature was actually created to be just like yours. Let our time with you be clearly defined by becoming like you. Let us become aware of how much power is available through our DNA being transferred into yours, that it's beyond decision making. Abba, I ask that you lift up our head, that you return us to reciting our history with you and the beauty of our existence that we've had with you. Whether we went through conversion as a child or conversion as an adult, let us remember every moment, every miracle, every devotional time, every scripture read where we just encountered you. Let us move as a family into the awareness of what it means to be alone, one-on-one with the Christ, veil removed. We just worship you. We center ourselves upon you, your personhood, your presence, and your person. Worship you in Jesus' name.